If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the Eternal One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening our seminar topic is the planetary and interplanetary Mahatmas and their mission to Earth. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and visualize yourself from the great, 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 great central sun systems in a column of divine light. Right down through the top of your crown chakra. Bring it all the way down to the center of your body. Expand it out into a massive column incorporating your physical biosphere. Bring it all the way down through your legs, through your feet, and surcharge it into the very soul center, the soul star in the center of the earth. Be and visualize yourself as a divine continuum from the very highest point of the God realms that you can possibly conceive of, all the way down through your body and into this earth. Occupy yourself totally. Know that you are immortal life and life itself. You are immortal light and life itself. You're not becoming light one day or through ascending. One day, you are light. So just know that. Be it. Integrate it. You have always been the light, and you shall always be the light. Eternal, immortal, beyond the dream episodes of birth and death and becoming, you are forever one with all that is. Well, that being said, tonight we're going to take a venture into the esoteric perspective, which was my root teaching in this lifetime and my schooling and training. So it's a realm that I love to discourse on. It's one I'm very familiar with. And I'll be speaking of things that I've had direct experience with, as I always try to do. And share with you and evoke your own knowing in this process. So we're going to be looking at what is a Mahatma, where do they come from, why are they here, what is their primary focus in terms of humanity, and such things as that. So let me ask you, have you ever met a Mahatma? Mahatma means great soul. Maha is great, Atma is spirit. So it's a great spirit. You're all familiar with the term Mahatma Gandhi, for example. He was the great soul we knew as Gandhi. But it simply means a master. It's a superhuman man or woman, someone who has outgrown the learning that the human evolution, the human stages of unfoldment has produced and has moved into the superhuman stage. That is a Mahatma. So have you ever met a Mahatma, a truly enlightened master? And would one recognize such a person if they did have such an encounter? And what would call forth the necessity of such a direct meeting with a Mahatma? What exactly is a Mahatma, a genuine master? these are the areas we'll be exploring in this seminar. And it leaves you lots of good seeds to contemplate and apply in your own understanding. So we're living in a time in which it has been referred to as the externalization of the masters of wisdom. And their leader, the one known as the Christ, which in this understanding is a title, like the Dalai Lama. When we speak of the Christ, we're speaking of the one who directly represents the heart of God, the, you might say, personification of our highest divine potential. And so the one known as the Christ for the planet Earth is a master by the name of Lord Maitreya, or Maitreya Buddha. And he's been foretold to come in every world religious tradition, but under a variety of names. So let's just bypass the necessity for haggling over the names at this point. And let's look at the Christ as the embodied principle, with a capital B, of compassion and love, like the Bodhisattva, like Mahavishnu, and such. So, during this time, and since I would say probably 1975-77, many of the masters have externalized physically from their strongholds where they have been in retreat for, some say, the past 94,000 years, because during the time when the Atlantean root race fell, they withdrew their physical presence, which up to that time they had lived openly on the physical plane. And according to some, we, as a human kingdom, were at a very high level of spiritual understanding. And then, through the aberration of the Merkabic field and other things that occurred at that time, there was a fall in consciousness and an entrapment in the lowest density, which we call the third dimension. And so the work of the masters from behind the scenes for all of these thousands of years has been to restore the plan, the divine plan on Earth, to where it was in the golden age of Atlantis, and even better because we're advancing now beyond Atlantis, but at least to where we were before the fall occurred, and then some. That's what they've been doing. And they have started this through a process of what they call accelerated light infusion and integration, which they call initiations. These are light initiations, which are basically returning the electromagnetic fields, the biochemistry, and the cellular light quotient back to where it was before the fall occurred. And so that's the restoration or the reclamation of the fallen light and its reinstitution back into the limitless, supernal light of the pure, divine, higher mind, higher consciousness, higher awareness. I've been doing series after series of seminars now on the consciousness and the awareness that we are moving into as we move into the enlightened, the higher stages of enlightenment. So the masters, when they externalize, do it through several ways. Many of them who are the, quote, ascended masters, these are beings who have immortalized their bodies, they're in a mortal essence, let's say, and they can step in and out of form as it is appropriate. Many of these have adopted what is called an astral-physical form. This would be a physical body, but in a much, much higher degree of vibration. So for all intents and purposes, generally invisible to anyone except someone who has extended sight. So that would be qualified as a physical form, even though it's an astral hyphen physical form. Then, and what that is actually is a densified physical. In fact, the beautiful Venusian emissary we have on the planet, Omnic Onyx, has described her body as a densified into the physical level from the astral plane of Venus. So she's actually wearing a body that has been densified from the astral plane into a physical form. But she's not a walk-in, that's her real body. Next, the masters can appropriate what's been called a Maya Virupa. Maya means illusory, Virupa means form. And so the Maya Virupa is the form that the master can appropriate for any degree of time. The Lord Maitreya is wearing a Maya Virupa that he'll be wearing for the next 2,500 years. And it is capable of being infinitely regenerated. And I understand it took him 7 years of intense visualization and meditation to create his Maya Virupa, which he now wears. And it looks like a regular human form. I have seen him. I've been in his presence. And he looks like any other Pakistani Indian, although very tall and very handsome. And he's residing in East London at this time. And I've had many, many, many encounters with him, especially when I was living in London. So the other way that the masters manifest is through taking actual physical incarnation, through the birth process. But when they come in that way, it's specifically to serve at this time. Of course, you have the succession of Tibetan masters who, like the Dalai Lama and the Karmapa, they incarnate life after life because they've taken that Mahayana vow of until, you know, all sentient beings have achieved enlightenment. And that's called the Bodhisattvas. So, to upgrade a little bit the understanding of the Master Jesus, which is highly controversial. This has been known for, you know, eons in the archives of the masters, but it's very, very controversial when you introduce it to Christianized Western people who are not acquainted with the ancient wisdom teachings. So I'll just share it with you, and you can research yourself and draw your own conclusions. Because this isn't me telling you how it is, this is me sharing with you various lenses of understanding and perspective, but you have to do your own homework. You know, there's no one answer. In fact, you could say that everyone's perspective, everything that anyone has to say or share, is correct from the way they see it, based on their understanding, their schooling, their karma, their background. And so once you realize everybody's right, and at the same time, everyone is dreaming and asleep, more or less, except for these Mahatmas, then you can, you know, play with the information without letting it get you all upset. So the Master Jesus was overlighted by his master, the Lord Maitreya, and during the time of the crucifixion, it is said in the ancient archives of the masters that the Master Jesus went through the fourth initiation of the crucifixion and joined with his master, then went through the resurrection. And that was a co-endeavor. He went through the fourth degree. His master, Maitreya, went through the sixth degree of initiation at that point. And it was a joint effort. But that's true for every one of us. Every single one of us has a master upline. Every master has a master upline. No one is without a spiritual authority and cover over them. Everyone is clothed, is mantled with a higher consciousness. Everyone. I've often described it as we nest in each other like so many babushka dolls, you know, those little Russian dolls that fit one in the other, like that. And the other way the masters manifest is through overlighting one of their initiated disciples. In fact, it's been said of the fourth degree initiate, Krishnamurti, whom I used to love to spend time with in the Oak Groves back in the times he would give his lectures in Ojai, California, that he was being prepared to be the vehicle through which the Lord Maitreya would manifest. And so he was overlighted by the Lord Maitreya until, it is said by the Master DK, he decided to take initiations along the Devic line of evolution, and by doing that, he was not in sync with the human line of evolution at that point. And he went in another direction, because you always have free will. You know, nobody's going to twist your arm and say you have to do it this way or that way. When you get that high, as Krishnamurti was, you can certainly, you certainly have free will to chart your own course. And what he objected to very much was the adulation and deification people were projecting onto him. And he didn't want any part of that. And so he chose to go a totally different direction. And if you want to really read material from a truly soul-infused, pure soul, higher consciousness, read some of the writings of Krishnamurti, Jiddu Krishnamurti. Incredible, incredible. But very, very clear in how he observed. He was like, when we speak about an objective observer, that was the place that he was looking at life from all the time. And when he prayed to the Father in heaven, he was actually speaking to Sanat Kumara, and the heaven that he was referring to is what we know as Shambhala, which is an actual, real place. Again, it's located in higher physical matter, so that it is invisible except to those who have a right to see. And it is visited in soul body. And I have been there several times in soul body. So I know it's real. I've seen it. I've experienced it. And I've met some of the emissaries of Shambhala, such as the Rorik family. So what is a Mahatma? A Mahatma is a master of wisdom. He or she is superhuman. They have graduated from the human stage of limitation and emotional and mental complexities and dramas and all of that. They have mastered themselves. And this is the path we're all on. We're all going to emerge one day. In some life, we will move into the stage of being a Mahatma. So generally, they come into the world at least until relatively recently in the male form. Why? Because with few exceptions, most women do not have as much freedom of expression as a man does. So generally, they take a male form. But there are women masters too, of course. And they especially in the sound current lineages, you have many of the, what they call it, the Ek masters that come in female form, and so forth. But just to let you know why, very often they are in male form. It's not because women can't attain enlightenment. Of course they can. But the fact that it's easier to operate when you're in a male body. Now, that will change after 2050, according to the Master DK. And there will be more and more evidence of the women masters coming forward. Of course, you have women avatars. That's a different thing. So, where do they come from? A master can come from any place. In fact, the original masters of our hierarchy, Sanat Kumara, for example, the Kumaras come from Venus. And as you know, Lord Ashtar and myself come from Venus originally, most recently. And so you have a lot of the masters. The Master Katumis, or KH, is a Venusian. The Master Moria is often referred to in two ways, as the Prince of Neptune, and sometimes he's been referred to by his Chela and his twin flame, Helena Rorik, as from Jupiter. So I guess I would tend to take her word for it, since she knows him better than anyone else. Then you have masters who have since become masters from the Earth. I believe one of the most recent masters who has attained masteries, ascended masteries, the Master DK, the Tibetan, who gave the teachings, the marvelous teachings, to Alice Bailey. And let's see, what else do we have? Well, they can come from any one of the higher planets and have and do, and also from Earth, because as more and more of the human life wave attains mastery, you have them moving into positions within the spiritual hierarchy. So the planetary and the interplanetary masters work together. There's no such thing as the masters that are just working on the Earth and they're different from the extraplanetary masters, for example, like Ashtar and the members of the Galactic Command, not all of whom are masters. We have all levels of spiritual unfoldment within the Ashtar Command, but we also have many, many beings who have ascended and attained a level of mastery even beyond those of the ones that we're going to be speaking about here on Earth. So you have the great, great Lords of Light, like Lord Ashtar, who is one of the highest beings in this universe, probably next to Lord Sananda, who is his master. And Lord Sananda would be the galactic Christ, or the one that holds that position, which, again, is like an office. It's like a level that one occupies as their arena of responsibility. But Lord Sananda is the master of Ashtar and the one who trained him. But they're very similar in vibration, because the disciple eventually moves into complete oneness with the master. So that certainly has been the case with Ashtar and Lord Sananda. Let's see, what else do we have here? Some of the questions were, what is their primary focus in terms of humanity? Their primary focus is the spiritualization of the human consciousness. It's moving from the ego formation of the separative self to unifying the heart and the mind into what we would call goodwill. I think that would define it probably in a way that is closest to what they're looking to implement. It's a sense of goodwill amongst all people, amongst everyone, so that there's more of a sense of global family, global community, global cooperation. That's what they're seeking to implement. They can't force our hand. They have to work through the soul principle. And since most people are not in conscious contact with their soul principle and are functioning out of the lower mind, they can't always get through. And so that's why they have teachers on all levels on Earth to be able to reach through at least them. You know, most teachers have some measure of soul contact, spiritual teachers I'm speaking of. So they have some way to reach the masses of humanity, which for the most part are sound asleep and numbed out with media and whatever. So you have that problem there. But within the masses of humanity, you have groups of people who have achieved a measure of soul integration and soul infusion, and these would be the disciples and initiates of the Master. And in that case, they have contact, at least sporadic, and sometimes quite good contact with the Masters, and then to that degree, they can be useful in teaching and writing and speaking so that they can be good influences in awakening their fellow brothers and sisters on the planet. So that's why in each seminar, since our mission is very much what we're speaking of here, it's about restoring the awareness of wholeness and holiness in humanity. That's the mission of this body-mind complex and everything that she writes and transmits and teaches. And it is the mission of all of the Mahatmas and Masters that I'm speaking about tonight and their disciples and their initiates. We're all on the same page. Planetary, interplanetary, interdimensional, the people in the inner Earth, the Agartian community of Telos, all of the beings that come in through the office of the Christ and the Order of Melchizedek, which all true masters do, all true teachers of light, come in through those two lineages. That's what we're doing. That's the gig. And that's why I have that focus week after week in these weekly transmissions, because that is what I was told to teach, and from a variety of points of view, because there would be a very wide listening audience, many different backgrounds, and that I was to make use of all of the schooling and training I've had in this lifetime, which has been very extensive and multifaceted. So that's the reason. And the Ashtar Command, whom I directly represent, our total focus is spiritual education. Well, I won't say our total focus, because we work through many, many, many different levels of teachers and channels and intuitives and empaths and grid workers and men and women that are in all the various departments of the planet, human endeavor, all of the things on the planet. The Ashtar Command has representatives and ground crew members everywhere, everywhere. But through me, personally, my focus, I work with the consciousness grids of humanity. I work with the overall direction of consciousness as it moves back into God, self and God realization. So that's the focus as we speak each week. And I'm not supposed to talk about the other things that are covered by other members of the command better than me, because that's the area they've been assigned. And I've been assigned this area. So that's what I do. So there are many, many lineages and lodges that I believe most light workers have some connection to and affiliation with. I'm sure I'm not the Lone Ranger, because I have affiliation with all of these lodges, and I think many of you do as well. Maybe as not as consciously as I do, because I've made this my business. But you can be conscious of whatever you have an interest to be conscious and aware of and have a need to be aware of. So the term Mahatma means great soul. And the term Chohan, which many of you see, C-H-O-H-A-N, is a lord. For example, when we call Ashtar, Lord Ashtar, he is a Kohan, a Chohan. And that implies a being of very high administration. You have the Maha Chohan, who within terms of our planetary administration is the administrative head and overseer, which has been occupied by Saint Germain for a very long time, and his master, Master R, or Prince Rakotsi. Sometimes you think of the two as the same being, which again, as an initiated disciple of that master, he's merged with his master. So whether you call him Saint Germain or Master R or Prince Rakotsi, you have the same essence, if you catch my drift here. So all of the members of the spiritual brother and sisterhoods of light function as reflections of Shambhala, which is a reflection of the Sirian Great White Lodge on the sun star Sirius, which is the real seat of the spiritual administration, and the High Council magistrates that we function under. Then you have the Trans-Himalayan Lodge. Generally, these masters work behind the scenes. These would be the masters Gautami and Maurya and Saint Germain and Hilarion, and beings that are familiar to you. I didn't name Seraphis Bey in that because he is actually a Devic prince. So he's more in the what we'd call the lineage of the Devas and angels, although he's kind of a blending of those lineages because he works in the Egyptian lodge, and his headquarters is in Luxor, where in the spiritual levels above the Temple of Luxor, he has his mystery school of ascension. And the work that I initially started to do on the planet back in sometime in the 80s was directly under his physical sponsorship. So Prince Seraphis Bey is the head of the Ascension School in Luxor, Egypt. But then you also have the lineages of Isis and Osiris. You have the Isis lineages. You have the Osirian lineages and mystery schools. You have the mystery schools of Nefertiti, the mystery schools of Akhenaten, and the blending of those. And then you have Tai and Ai, the grandparents of Nefertiti, who also had mystery schools back in Atlantis that trained Christs. And I understand they produced 12 Christed beings during that time, presumably before the fall. But isn't that interesting? You know, we have a rich, rich heritage and understanding here. Now, you have the South Indian Lodge. That would be beings like Sri Aurobindo and Sweet Mother Meera, and Mother Meera, the one in Germany, and Amici, and Sri Ananda Moima. In other words, you have a lot of teachers who are out there in the world where people can say, oh, yeah, there's the ashram of, for example, Ramana Maharshi, things like that that were more accessible and where you could find them on the physical plane. Then you have the avatars. You have the full avatars, which were like Rama, Krishna, Sai Baba. These are full avatars. They're very rare. And they all come through Vishnu, that line of energy that we call the Vishnu or the Mahavishnu manifestation. And then you have their divine companions, which are called Anga or aspect embodiments of some divine potency. And then you have the spiritual travelers of divine light and sound. And here you have a tradition that goes back through all of the root races, the Polarian, Hyperbian, Lemurian, Atlantean, the current one, which is the Adamic, and so on, because there will be 12 major ages, and there will be a spiritual traveler or a Mahanta, a living Ekmaster, has been in each of those lines and will continue to be in each of them forever, because there's always at least at presentation into time and space in each age. The anchoring point for that teaching is in Chanhassen, Minnesota. I've been to the beautiful Temple of Golden Wisdom they have there. That's the seat of that energy's anchoring on the physical plane through Ekankar and the current head of Ekankar for many, many years, Sri Harold Klemp. You also have the spiritual travelers through the Sikh lineages. You have, I forget who's holding the current lineages, but you have the one that started with Charan Singh, Kirpal Singh, Ajib Singh, those various masters that I have seen and been with, that represent the sound current, the teachings of light and sound, Rajendra Singh. Who else do we have? Blanking out on some of the names, but they're familiar to you. Oh, Thakur Singh. Yes, these are all the sound current, teachings of light and sound through the Sikhs. And then you have the movement of spiritual inner awareness, which has its anchoring point here in Los Angeles in Peace Theological Seminary and College of Philosophy in our big headquarters, which is called Prana, Purple Rose Ashram of the New Age. And that is a teaching of divine light and sound that comes in kind of under the Christian mantle because the Lord Jesus the Christ is the head of MSIA. And he works, of course, through my spiritual teacher, John Roger, and his successor, John Morton. So again, you have the spiritual travelers of light and sound that come down through these lineages and successions, and it passes on down. My dear friend Paul Twitchell, whom I've known as a friend for probably many lifetimes, probably from Venus, but more recently, in the early 60s, I met him on the Inner Plains, started Ekankar, and then it was passed through his successor, and then from his successor to the current leader of Ekankar. And that teaching comes from Venus. That has its roots on Venus. In fact, John Roger was my teacher on Venus. I found out not too long ago. Tuned in on that one. So on Venus, the teaching of light and sound is called Om Notia Zadia, which means the way of the eternal. And a person who is teaching that directly on the planet today is Omnic Onik from Venus. So who better? Who better to teach that? And I do my best to, although I've been told to teach from many traditions, not just simply that one, but all of the sacred traditions. Now, the teachings of light and sound form the inner kernel of teachings in every single spiritual tradition. Everyone has a sacred oral tradition that's kept within that particular inner circle. You'll find that the outer circle teachings have to do with books and physical discourses, but the inner is where initiates actually have to move into, beyond the light, into the divine sound current, because the light can only take you up through the psychic and material realms as far as the soul realm, and then to go beyond, you have to take the sound current. So light and sound are necessary to make that full re-appropriation back into the higher divine levels. So the mystery schools that I'm speaking of are Lemurian, Atlantean, Hindu, Persian, Turkish, Sufi, Buddhist, Tibetan, Chinese, Japanese, Hebraic, Kabbalistic, Grecian, Chaldean, African, Afghanistani, and if I forgot some, just add them in there, because every single spiritual tradition has an inner circle of initiates that have gone into the God realms through light and sound. So the Mahatmas are men and women, and they're all service-oriented. All of them are inclusive of all humanity, regardless of race, creed, color, gender preference, or any other definitive. They embrace all of humanity with unconditional love and are here to serve them. They're universal in orientation, and they are characterized by compassion, harmlessness, and nonviolence. That's how you can recognize them. So the masters, the Mahatmas, have as their main task the cultivation of goodwill, mutual accord, and understanding, so that there would be cooperation amongst all the peoples of Earth. This involves a spiritualizing of the mind, moving from that ego's separative, antagonism and dualism, moving beyond that to the unified field of expanded awareness, which involves awakening the spiritual heart. We've got the emotional heart going. It's the spiritual heart, which is the heart of compassion. It's the sacred heart that needs to open. And the interplay and integration between that mind and that heart and the body and the soul, so that it functions as one cohesive unit of goodwill. So thus, through spiritual awakening and integration, the Mahatmas work to dissipate global tension, which could otherwise escalate into a nuclear holocaust and destroy all life on Earth. And that's not going to be allowed to happen. So it's been stated by the Tibetan master way back at the time of the Second World War that atomic power was placed completely under the jurisdiction and control of the planetary logos of planet Earth, who is the Lord, the Venusian Lord, Sanat Kumara, in Shambhala. He is the king of Shambhala. And it is under his direct call and direct jurisdiction. So neither Sanat Kumara nor the Galactic Command, the Ashtar Galactic Command, neither of them will allow atomic power to be used in global destruction. It's not going to happen, so don't worry about it. But also, don't go to sleep on the switch. Be proactive in implementing goodwill towards all mankind, all womankind. So there were several instances that were reported by the people present at the time where attempts to launch nuclear warheads were prevented by extraterrestrial spacecraft that were seen over those areas of operation. This has happened several times. So the Mahatmas worked usually behind the scenes and from the inner levels of higher awareness and through their initiated disciples who are working in the world and in every area of human endeavor. And thus they work through soul impression and telepathic rapport with those who are sensitive to their guidance. To be sensitive to telepathic impression of the Mahatmas, one needs to have a measure of soul contact and integration. And as I've said many times before, the first evidence of soul contact and integration is the desire to be of service. So all of you who have a strong desire to be of service, that's where that's coming from, the soul contact and integration that you have attained. So this soul integration is developed through prayer and proper meditational practice. Prayer is where you have an intention to communicate with that which is higher. Meditation is being committed to implementing that contact and making it more experiential, sitting with it, being present with it, contemplating it, and then being able to work with the higher level so that you learn to transcend those things that would keep you reactive in the human levels. And you become more responsive spiritually, which would be loving, harmonious, kind, peaceful. So you need that meditational practice. You need to create for yourself a daily practice. You choose whatever it is. You'll find the best one for yourself. And then couple that with some form of spiritual study. And then you live a life of self-discipline, rein in your passions and your crazies, and try to be of service to other people for no particular reason. Just offer yourself. Be useful. As it says in the Course of Miracles, I'm here only to be truly helpful. So be helpful. So metaphysics and esoteric study will reveal the universal forces and laws that govern creation and the manifestation of consciousness through the human and other forms. And that's important to understand. You know, I've had such a background of training in that. So it may not be necessary for some of you people just coming in and coming online in terms of your missions. But if it is, it is, and you'll have an interest and an aptitude for it. And if it isn't, then you can listen to some of these seminars and pick up a quick course and, you know, run with the ball. So the science of consciousness and spiritual integration is what I focus on primarily in these weekly seminars, and that would be by definition called esotericism or white magic. White magic is kind of a buzz term now, but white magic is actually the science of soul integration. It has nothing to do with doing spells. It's the science of soul infusion. There's a whole book on it in the Alice Bailey teachings. A treatise on white magic, it's called. And it's the 14 laws of soul infusion. Interesting, huh? Has a whole different spin back then. So the esoteric, let's say the metaphysical approach is the study of the science of mind. And the esoteric study involves the science of spirit. So both are important to understand. It's important to understand how the mind manifests your reality. And it's even more important to understand how you can transcend in your higher consciousness beyond the mind. So both approaches are useful in understanding our spiritual anatomy and how to coordinate our human spiritual levels. And know that everyone has a spiritual master. Whether or not consciously recognized, you have a master that is responsible for getting you home safely. So contact and recognition occurs with, you know, that master when one is ready to begin some specific course of training or a specific mission assignment. You know, when you're ready and useful to do some work, you're offered the opportunity to do that work. You're offered the opportunity. You're not told that you have to do it. Sometimes you have to intuit, and sometimes you're directly contacted. For example, with me, I was an esoteric Alice Bailey Blavatsky Agni Yoga teacher way back in the 60s. And about 1969, I was in Los Angeles visiting, and I went to a Vaisak festival, or Vaisaka, the full moon of the Buddha, which was one of the three major festivals that were celebrated by esotericists of the Alice Bailey tradition each year. And the speaker that year was a Dr. Torkan Sarodarian. And he saw me in the audience and invited me back to his ashram after he spoke, and we talked and had dinner, and I began to attend his classes that he had just started. And one day he said, "What are you doing sitting in class like a student? Don't you know you're a teacher?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I've had a feeling I'm a teacher, but I really don't know how to get started." He said, "Well, I'll show you how." And so that's really what he said that inspired me to to begin doing this work as a teacher, and to begin to take all of the training and study and everything that I had amassed, and step out with more confidence, because I needed someone to actually physically tell me. And some people can just intuit it and get on with it without that physical contact. But you see, he was a direct initiate disciple of the Master Moria. So that was the master I was working with at the time very closely. And so it's natural that he would be the one to get me going. So know that no one has ever overlooked. All of the Mahatmas and their advanced initiates have as their task the locating and escorting of souls that are ready to go home to God. And even if they're not ready to go home to God, to escort them to a teaching that will prepare them to move into higher awareness. So, how to prepare? Well, if you don't have a master now and would like to have one, ask. Ask to be led to a master or teacher that can best assist you in your spiritual unfoldment. When I became aware of a great desire to find my master teacher, I was guided initially to read autobiography of a yogi. And that's where I first heard of the immortal Mahatma Babaji. And he said that if you pray to him, that he will bless you and guide you. And I believed that, so I asked him to direct me to a guru, a teacher. And I wanted a live one, because otherwise I would have made a beeline for Yogananda. But I wanted a relationship with my teacher like Yogananda had with his master, Sri Yukteswar. So very shortly thereafter, I don't think it was even 3 weeks, after I said that prayer, my teacher was sent to find me. This was a woman teacher that's since passed away from the Ashtar Command. And she found me and told me that I was from Venus, that I was from the Ashtar Command, and that I was to work with her in this lifetime, that we'd been together in Egypt with Akhenaten and Nefertiti. She didn't tell me that. I had to tune into that. But she confirmed it after I did. And she was the one that trained me for the Ashtar Command mission that I am currently fulfilling. So that's what happened to me. That's how I made that first teaching, or teacher. But she passed me on just before she passed away to Flower Newhouse, who is a Christian mystic, California. Studied with her for a while. And then I finally was passed on and to the, well, there was just a succession of teachers, until I finally found my root guru, Sai Baba, and he sent me to my Western teacher, John Roger. So there was a succession of hands that passed me from one to the other until, you know, I was finally ready to, you know, find my root connections. So you will always recognize your guru, your master, because the heart simply knows. And as I said before, remember that all masters have a master themselves. All work in a succession of lineages of masters and teachings. And every one of us has an upline, a spiritual upline. We will feel a draw to these spiritual teachings and masters that we knew previously in other lifetimes. And sometimes we're led to adopt other approaches in this lifetime if it seems like we're getting into a reincarnational rut. You know, some lineages, they promote the idea of reincarnating over and over and over. And that's okay if that's what you want to do, but it's entirely unnecessary. And I was getting in a reincarnational rut. My last 4 lifetimes, I was a Hindu guru. And so this time, that was exactly what I was headed off to be again. I wanted to live in the ashram of Sai Baba. And, you know, I didn't want anything to do with the world or the West. So he sent me off to a really fine Western master by the name of John Roger, also teach us out of a sound current Christian orientation. And that was what he Sai Baba recognized would be best for me in terms of my development. And I took embodiment in a female form in the United States instead of in India, where I usually was in a male form. So your master works with you spiritually, generally from a distance. And for example, there's a level of our consciousness called in the esoteric teachings the seventh principle. And that is said to reside in Shambhala, which is an actual location and city. It's not Shangri-La, which is up in the Mongolian steppes. It is actually a spiritual abode of the masters. But all of us have a connection there at a high, very high level of consciousness. And I'll share more on that perhaps next week. But I just wanted to give you that little idea that you're connected. You have a connection to the very heart and mind and will of God. And you have a home on this planet even in a higher dimension. And, well, that's kind of a... I find I'm running out of time. Otherwise, I would have said more. Too bad. Oh, well. Maybe I can continue this next week. But anyway, that will keep you happy, perhaps, for this coming week. Give you something to chew on. So this is the disciples' prayer. I am a point of light within a greater light. I am a strand of loving energy within the stream of love divine. I am a spark of sacrificial fire focused within the fiery will of God, and thus I stand. I am a way by which men may achieve. I am a source of strength enabling them to stand. I am a beam of light shining upon their way, and thus I stand. And standing thus revolve, and tread this way the ways of men, and know the ways of God. And thus I stand. So I hope this has been helpful to you. Know that you are that point of light. You are that spark of sacrificial fire. You are the way and the source of strength and the beam of light for all of humanity. Beloveds, walk in your life in the ways of mankind, but know always the ways of God. And thus you stand. Let's go out chanting three ohms. Deep breath. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace and divine light and blessings to all the worlds and all the beings of all the worlds.